Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to find out how coconut oil fights deadly yeast infections. Tufts University. And we have a little over a dozen other original studies from peer-reviewed literature that really inform us how we can live longer lives and be healthier in the process. Then we're going to address a continuation of what I started the other day, showing how we're taking for granted that we have all these rights and freedoms, and yet every day we're finding another reason to be concerned. I'll give you more specific details of my own commentary. Additionally, today we're going to have an interesting look at a world-famous vaccine expert, but this time he's not out there giving us his, his opinion in some scientific journal. He's being challenged in a court deposition. Dr. Plotkin discusses vaccine safety. This should be an eye-opener. Also, ProPublica really came out and attacked Robert Kennedy Jr. for his position on vaccines. We tried to get Robert on the show, but he's busy. So we're going to challenge ProPublica and the New York Times. We've done our homework. Our hope is that in the spirit of an enlightenment, they will do theirs after the discussion a little later on. So we have a lot to share today. And we're going to begin with the latest from Tufts University. It's just a common, easily defined oil. Buy it organic. That's coconut oil. And it has antifungal properties. We knew it had antiviral properties. We knew it had healing properties. The coconut palm is perhaps the world's most widely distributed and versatile food medicine. It's been used by indigenous cultures for a long time for a wide range of health complaints, in fact, since time immemorial. Now the scientific evidence is validating its traditional ascribed health benefits, for example, supporting brain health, protecting the heart, helping with Alzheimer's, even reducing stress and depression. But what of the comments that people have used it as an antifungal agent, especially with candida? Indeed, a recent study led by researchers at Tufts University has found that coconut oil is highly effective at controlling the overgrowth of the opportunistic and fungal pathogen Candida albicans in this laboratory experiment. This was published in the American Society of Microbiology's journal Sphere, and that's important. So there you have it. We have a lot of scientific evidence of why we should be eating coconut oil. But we're just not. I believe people should be massaging it into their skin before they go to bed at night, even massaging it into your scalp. From Gifu University in Japan comes a study showing that acupuncture and herbal medicine can prevent delirium in patients with cardiovascular disease. In this study, the researchers from the Graduate School of Medicine at Gifu University investigated the effectiveness of combining two different therapies, acupuncture and traditional herbal medicine, what in Japan is called Kampo, C-A-M-P-O medicine, in reducing the incidence and the rate of delirium in patients in the intensive care unit. The results of the study were so impressive they were published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine. So another thing that historically has not been used in the United States but now should be because it's met all the parameters. From the University of Toronto, a meta-analysis, meaning many studies, were looked at, and they found that, yes, indeed, soy helps your heart. And this was published in the Journal of Nutrition. And it supports the idea that it reduces the risk of heart disease. So that's important. So also other nuts do as well. Walnuts do. And food components like vicus fibers and plant sterols. So when you're having a really quality, diversified plant-based diet, you're getting in your plant sterols, eating blueberries and raspberries and strawberries and tart cherries, eating various tubers and grains. Yeah, it makes a difference to your heart. So they look specifically at soy, and lots of literature there on soy and its benefit. Now, another study finds that nutrients in nuts really do improve sperm health. This is from the Rovira University in Spain. And, well, why would that be important? Well, if you're a couple and you want to have a healthy pregnancy, an intended pregnancy, you're concerned about infertility, and it's becoming more and more common in our world today. In fact, a meta-analysis titled Temporal Trends in Sperm Count, a systematic review and meta-regression analysis, finds that sperm concentrations, total sperm count, have fallen significantly. Now, interesting, it's fallen in the exact time that cell phones became popular, and North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand saw the sharpest declines. So they're saying now that two handfuls of nuts a day boost sperm count, motility, and vitality. So that's important. Why? Because you're getting the omega-3 fatty acids. And they're just deficient in so many foods that are processed. But they're very rich in walnuts, almonds, pecans, pistachios. So, again, something to consider, because they're really good for you. Also, from Penn State University comes a study about the disruption in our internal body clock. That's not good, because it increases your cancer risk. It was about 6 months ago, I did a commentary about people who work night shifts or people who are sleep deprived, and they end up with a higher incidence of cancer. This supports that. And chronic disruptions of circadian rhythms or the internal body clocks can lead to an increased risk of cancer. That's the underlying mechanism by which the disturbances promote tumor growth, and it's largely been unknown until now. But let me back up a moment. You see, your internal clock or circadian rhythm controls when we sleep and wake and plays a role in other biological processes, such as your temperature regulation and hormone production. And some people have internal body clocks that run longer than 24 hours, or at the very least have slower adapting mechanisms to the traditional daily cycle. And agrarian cultures built their societies around sunlight, waking up with the sun to toil in the field and heading home as the sun lowered. And beneath the horizon, and that's how they lived. But the Industrial Revolution and electricity in particular brought the freedom to unshackle us from nature's clock. This was published in the journal PLOS Biology. So researchers at Penn Medicine show circadian rhythm disruptions trigger an increase in cell proliferation that ultimately shifts the cell cycle balance and stimulates the growth of tumors, at least in mice in this case. So just remember, when you're staying up late at night or you're working overnight, you're putting yourself at risk. From the Helmholtz Müchen Research Center, how fasting helps fight fatty liver disease. This is published in the Open Access Journal, EMBO, Molecular Medicine. And scientists found that what happens at the molecular level when we go hungry or restrict our calories. So it found that you're going to be healthier if you reduce your caloric intake to what your body actually needs. And you can help every single system in the body, including your blood sugar. You can help with diabetes. You can help with heart disease. So a reduction in the intake of our calories above what we actually require, that is important. And we're not doing it. We're overeating all the time. Also, a stress molecule reduces the absorption of fatty acids in the liver. And that's also important to know. Also, from Yakult Central Institute in Japan, probiotics, which they consume a lot of, mitigate stress in medical students at exam time. That's correct. A probiotic given to medical students during the run-up to the nationwide medical school examination reduces stress among the students. It's a simple bacteria. It's like a bacillus. And it can relieve many aspects of stress. Once again, just one another thing that it does. This is published in Applied Environmental Microbiology, a journal of the American Society for Microbiology, showing that something as simple as fermented foods, like sauerkraut or yogurt or kefir, or taking probiotics, can impact stress on your behalf in a good way. And we need that. Also, another study from Emory University and Georgia State University shows that probiotics stop menopause-like bone loss in this laboratory experiment. So, one more reason to make sure you're getting your probiotics. But try to see how much you're getting, because the amount you're getting makes a difference. And from Seoul National University College of Medicine in Korea, eating nuts is linked to a lower risk of colon cancer. That's good, because we have a lot of people dying of colon cancer. And this was presented at the American Association for Cancer Research's annual meeting. So just eating a serving of nuts 3 or more times a week had a big effect on risk, according to Dr. Shin, the professor of preventive medicine at Seoul National University College of Medicine. So we got to have our fiber, we have to have the fatty acids, and nuts contain both. Also, I've told you the dangers of processed fructose, the sugar that is so abundant in soft drinks and candies and different dishes that we eat. Well, a new study from the University of California, Los Angeles, shows that it alters our genes in the brain, and that sabotages learning and memory. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I would hope that parents would do some intentional studying, intentional research on the effects of sugar. It's not difficult. Just Google sugar, harmful effects, adverse effects. And I believe that early on, parents would say loud and clear that sugar is bad, processed sugars. And that's usually because they're concerned about the teeth. But as we grow older, other worries come into the forefront, especially during teenage and adult years, where body image plays an important role in modifying our sweet indulgences. Add a few more years, and the threat of diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and inflammation become a motivating force to steer clear of processed sugars. Now, scientists have added yet another reason: poor brain function, particularly inhibiting learning and memory. But it's a specific type of sugar that wields such devastating effects, one that can be found in almost every form of processed food. And that, again, is fructose. So they're not going to tell you fructose is bad. They're profiting off of it. That doesn't mean you have to be harmed because you didn't know the truth of it. It's not good. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 50 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come back. And when we come back, we're going to go to a video of a doctor under oath and being held accountable for what he has said in support of vaccines. I think you'll find it interesting. Please stay with us.
I like it. after vaccination, right?
Yes.
Okay. The title of that report is Adverse Effects of Vaccines, Evidence of Causality. Did you provide information to the Iowan committee conducting this review?
I don't recall specifically whether I did or not. A lot of people ask for my opinions, and when asked, I give my opinions.
See a section entitled Reviewers?
Oh, yes. I'm on the list.
The purpose of this independent review is to provide candid and critical comments that will assist the institutions in making its published report as sound as possible and to ensure that the report meets institutional standards for objectivity, evidence, and responsiveness to the study charge. It doesn't disclose that at that time you were working for all four of the major vaccine makers, correct? In 2011, were you receiving compensation or remuneration from Sanofi?
I was, yes, as I've said before, I was consulting for Sanofi as well as others.
Were you consulting for Merck?
Yes, probably at that time, yes.
And GSK?
Yes.
And as well as a whole host of other for-profit companies seeking to develop vaccines, correct?
Yes.
I'm just saying that's not mentioned here, correct?
No.
Okay. Tdap is one of the vaccines on the childhood schedule, right?
Yes.
It's administered to babies during the first year of life?
Yes.
We already talked about this at 2, 4, and 6 months, right?
Yes.
Now, as for Tdap, that's given to pregnant women, correct?
Yes.
What was the IOM's conclusion in 2011 about whether these vaccines can cause autism?
I'd have to look that up, but I feel confident that they do not cause autism.
You feel confident that that's what the IOM concluded?
I don't remember what the IOM concluded, but I don't believe there's any evidence that that's the case.
Can you read the causality conclusion with regard to whether DTaP and Tdap cause autism?
The evidence is inadequate to accept or reject a causal relationship between diphtheria toxoid, tetanus toxoid, or acellular pertussis containing vaccine and autism.
The evidence doesn't exist to show whether DTaP or Tdap do or do not cause autism, correct?
Yes. Evidence not being available
yes.
does not allow you to conclude that the phenomena, that there is a causal relationship.
But it does allow you to conclude that the evidence doesn't exist to say that DTaP and Tdap do not cause autism.
There is not evidence to say a million different things. We have no suspicions, at least I don't, that autism is caused by DTaP.
You may not have that suspicion, but it is one of the most commonly reported adverse events, which is why it was reviewed in this IOM report. Can you make the statement that vaccines do not cause autism if you don't know whether DTaP or Tdap cause autism?
I can say as a physician that no, they do not cause autism. You know, I can't be sure that DTaP doesn't cause leprosy. That doesn't mean that that stops me from using a DTaP vaccine.
Are people claiming that DTaP has caused leprosy? Are you aware of any such complaints?
I'm not aware of any such complaints, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it on the web one of these days.
Okay, but people have made enough complaints about DTaP, Tdap causing autism that the Institute of Medicine at the commission of HHS thought it was serious enough to do a scientific review, correct?
Yes. I mean, there are a million things on the web, including all kinds of diet advice based on ridiculous information. So why should I adopt that?
Are you saying that the IOM was engaging in a ridiculous review here? The only thing I've asked you is whether or not one can assert that vaccines do not cause autism.
Counselor,
not that they do.
Let's be real. You're asking me these questions because you want me to legitimize a view that vaccines cause autism, and I will not do that because absence of evidence is no proof whatsoever.
You're okay with telling the parent that DTaP, TDAP does not cause autism, even though the science isn't there yet to support that claim?
Absolutely.
I'm
also willing to tell them it doesn't cause leprosy.
Well, let's go back to what he just said. By the way, this is a three-part interview, so a deposition, and the other two become even more revealing. But he said, if you don't have the evidence, you can't make the claim. Well, we didn't have the scientific evidence that smoking caused emphysema and cancer. The FDA knew it, but they were hiding that because they were protecting the proprietary interests of the tobacco lobby and their patents. But it did cause cancer. We didn't have the evidence that asbestos could cause mesothelioma, but it did. We didn't have scientific evidence that the thousands of Native Americans, mainly Navajo, working in the mines, the uranium mines out west, could cause lung disease and break down their immune system and cause heart disease, but it did. We didn't have the evidence at the time, when it was first brought out, that synthetic hormone replacement therapy, Premarin and Prempro, could cause heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, dementia, and colorectal cancer. But it did. We didn't have the proof when they were first brought out that cell phones and any form of microwave equipment, including antennas, satellite beamings to antennas, to then from the antenna to our cell phones, could cause neurological disturbances, overheat our chromosomes, destroy and shorten the telomeres, which speed up the aging of the neurons in the brain. But it did. Now there are over 50 studies showing that, and 10,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing the dangers of Wi-Fi and G5, G4, G3, G2, and G1. But even with all that evidence now, in all the cases of rare type of brain and ear and neck cancers where the cell phone was kept, the industry, the communication industry, refuses to acknowledge it. And their scientists come forward and refuse to acknowledge it. 98% of the world's scientists acknowledge the reality of global warming. But the Koch brothers have spread the word that it's not real because their industries would have to be held accountable and make expensive changes to comply with lowering carbon dioxide emissions. So instead of putting that money where it belongs and protecting the environment, they put their money into front groups, astro groups, scientists, and environmental doctors to go forward saying global warming's not real. The planet's actually cooling. Greenland is re-icing. Antarctica's re-icing. And look at there. You hear it on the radio. Sean Hannity and others will say, hey, it's 20 below zero over, five states. There's your global warming. And that's the unfortunate part of intentional ignorance on the part of people who should know better. Because global warming in all of its manifestations can actually cause extreme temperature variations, including Arctic vortexes, to come further south than what they normally would. So you see, we have plenty of evidence everywhere that what the people are experiencing and reporting by the hundreds of millions is real. And we have science to back it up. But then you'll always have the person, just like this person, who says, well, that's not enough proof. But then they're only using one study of over 13 studies showing the direct link between autism and vaccination. And guess which two studies are the most significant to prove vaccine autism. And I'm surprised this attorney, I would suggest that he might want to do more homework. One was the CDC's own study, to which they went dutifully before Congress and lied under oath. And that woman is still at the CDC. And we have the lead scientist on the study, William Thompson, speaking in numerous phone calls to Dr. Brian Hooker, whose son was vaccine damaged, and saying, we covered it up. It was there. Over 300% increase in autism in African-American boys 36 months and younger. He said it. He apologized for it. And then he told Brian Hooker where he could get the actual information for himself. so it wouldn't seem as if it came from Thompson. And he did. And once he got this information, tens of thousands of documents, he then sent that to Representative Posey of Florida. And Posey, for the last 4 years, 5 years, has tried repeatedly to get any committee to bring forward Dr. Thompson from the CDC to testify under oath about the cover-up of autism and the MMR vaccine. And you know that no committee will allow Dr. Thompson to come forward and testify. Wow. What does that tell you about how compromised and captured those individuals are? And then you had the Vera Stratton study, even before that, where Dr. Vera Stratton met in secret at a secret Christian conclave over in, I believe it was Georgia, called Simpsonwood. And there he laid out to the World Health Organization, the FDA, the CDC, and the vaccine makers, wow, we got a problem. We have hundreds of thousands of kids here, 200,000 in this one study, and there is a statistically significant marker for autism in them. And they all scrambled. How do we cover this up? What do we do about it? And they did everything they could to try to fudge the numbers, dilute the numbers. So there you have two different governmental agencies, both concluding autism is from vaccines. And if either one of those people were ever brought into a trial and had to testify under oath, the entire vaccine edifice would collapse overnight. The pro-vax people would see that they had been on the wrong side for whatever their motivation. They were wrong. And we're just going to keep bringing you the truth on these. For example, Wikipedia is a big supporter of vaccines. Wikipedia doesn't believe, you know, along with Stephen Barrett, that that fluoridated water is bad. Okay, what do we have today, just today? This comes from a prominent toxicologist. He is Dr. Stephen G. Gilbert, Ph.D., director and founder of the Institute for Neurotoxicological and Neurological Disorders, and affiliate of professor at the University of Washington School of Public Health. And an article he just brought out, Fluoride Ingestion, Connecting the Dots for Health. And it talks about how toxic fluoride is. Quote, he writes, between 2017 and 2019, high-quality studies confirm lowering IQ at common fluoride exposure levels, end quote. Now, a 2006 NAS review determined that fluoride can interfere with brain functions. Since then, hundreds of studies in animals and humans validate the conclusions and reports. Additionally, fluoride is an endocrine disruptor known to lower thyroid function since the 1950s. End quote. He states that. So what we're looking at is we're looking at two types of science. One that supports independent and critical thinking to determine whether something that we've been led to believe is accurate or not. And the other is completely compromised, totally captured. Medical doctors and PhDs and governmental agencies and the news media siding only and exclusively with one side, those who pay the bills, the pharmaceutical industry. Remember, and here's what he says, quote, fluoridation is unethical because fluoride in water is used as a drug. There's no informed consent. Low-income families can't avoid it. Kids should be able to reach and maintain their full potential. Fluoride is an environmental and social justice issue. Kidney patients, diabetics, and nutrient deficient are more vulnerable to fluoride and more prevalent in low-income populations, end quote. So you see, we have on our side real scientists and real peer-reviewed literature. This was from Dr. Gilbert, who is also recognized by the Society of Toxicology with his Public Communications Award for broadening the public's understanding of toxicological issues. So not only do we have someone coming out as a toxicologist, we also have the official toxicology group acknowledging his courageous work. You won't find that on Wikipedia. Not at all. In on the phone right now, we have our producer, one of our scholars in residence, Richard Gale. Richard has a very strong background in science research and worked in the vaccine industry. He worked in the genetic engineering and genome industry and doing critical analysis. And I sent Richard, since I'm doing a retreat right now and my day is packed, I don't have any time to do this well, and until after it's over tomorrow. But I said, Richard, the New York Times has attacked Robert F. Kennedy Jr., using his brother and sister to attack him. And then ProPublica attacked him. And I felt that what we should do, if Robert Kennedy didn't have time or wasn't in a place at this moment to defend his position, that we should do it for him. So you have an opportunity now, Richard, to put this in perspective for the audience and offer your challenge.
Okay. There's this is from the Politico piece. It was published in Politico. So it was Robert Kennedy, and then it was family members and a person from the government's global vaccine surveillance group in Washington, D.C. We've discussed measles a lot, and it just reiterates the 700 cases that are reported and that there's been an increase. And we've done this before, but there's other points I'd like to be able to touch upon. But I think with the onslaught of all the laws that are appearing across the states now to remove exemptions and then requiring vaccine mandates, what we're not hearing, and I would suspect this is suppressed information, is that we're not seeing any of the sequencing of the actual strains that are occurring in these so-called infections. By doing the proper sequencing in the infected patients, we can know whether the infection is being caused by the vaccine itself through shedding, or whether it's occurring as a wild measles virus. And we're not getting this. Now, during the Disney outbreak earlier in Disneyland, those reports came out, and there was a significant percent of persons who were fully vaccinated that were receiving the who were getting the measles infection. But we're not seeing that during this outbreak, so I just kind of suspect that that's just suppressed information. Now they're also going, they're giving a fear tactic that there's now these new reports coming out of 41 new cases of whooping cough that occurred in Maine, and then they're saying, well, this was a disease once thought to be a relic of the past. This is just poppycock. In 2013, there were the first reports came out in New England Journal of Medicine that there is a new Bordetella pertussis strain that is resistant to the vaccine. The virus is now adapting to the vaccine. And it's being called the protactin deficient strain. Protactin is a certain protein from the pertussis bacteria that is used for the creation of the vaccine, and it has to deal with the cell bonding. And the CDC says now these are the infections. This new strain is what is appearing, and much earlier this strain apparently originated in Australia, and the Australian scientists feel that this new strain may be appearing because of the over vaccination, just in the same way we've overused antibiotics. Just 4 days ago, the University of South Wales reported that one of the largest pertussis outbreaks is occurring in China right now. And 98% of these cases are this antibiotic-resistant strain as well. So these are new strains that are coming out, and no amount of vaccination of the pertussis vaccine is going to protect a person from these. It goes on again in the article, you know, just speaking about how many deaths have been reported by the World Health Organization for measles. Of course, this is all in developing countries, and we know measles can be very deadly in developing countries where there's severe malnutrition, other immunocompromised conditions because of environmental factors, parasites, dehydration, and especially vitamin A deficiency. There is a direct correlation that sufficient amounts of vitamin A in the system can protect one from a measles infection. What else does this crazy article have? it brings up the major debate, and the debate we've always been having between those who question vaccine safety and efficacy and those who are the proponents of it is whether the benefits outweigh the risks or the risks outweigh the benefits. And, you know, our stance has been, because the officials recognize there are risks to vaccines, and this article does state that the vaccines do cause injuries, but officials seem to be refusing to take a very serious look at the risks of vaccines that may be contributing to all these other emerging epidemics that we're finding in children, not just autism, but ADHD and diabetes, allergies, asthma, other weakened immune systems. There's just almost a complete refusal to even consider that there might be a relationship between that and the fact that we're giving so many vaccines to children today. What else we have here? They're talking about how many lives have been saved. This 2 million, 3 million deaths per year are saved. There's no science to prove how many lives have been saved. This was a ploy that Bill Gates started when he gave a huge amount of money to the University of Pittsburgh to try to calculate how many lives have been saved from vaccines during the past century. And there's just anybody, it's just common sense to recognize there's far too many other factors involved to generate any kind of statistics such as this, because it excludes all these other factors, as we've been stating, like malnutrition and poverty, contaminated water, other pollutants, other cofactor infections, pesticide exposure, compromised immune systems, parasites. These are all excluded from the equation. So this is, it's just nonsensical. The one area which is kind of finished up here, really, is they're praising the human, the HPV, the Gardasil, the human papilloma virus vaccine, as being one of the big success stories. Well, let's look at the VAERS database. This is the CDC's database of vaccine injuries. What do we find there just from the Gardasil vaccine? There's been an enormous increase of Guillain-Barré syndrome, other serious events. An analysis of VAERS database showed that there was a 1,130% increase in Guillain-Barré syndrome from Gardasil. There's 674% increase in injuries from falls after the girls, the teenagers, lose consciousness. In fact, my niece lost consciousness after taking the vaccine and fell, but wasn't seriously injured. There's a 234% increase in coordination and neuromuscular problems. There are many of these cases of some of these girls who were remarkable athletes in their high schools who, after taking the Gardasil shots, are now incapacitated to even do any kind of sports or physical activity. There's a 118% increase in cardiac problems, 114% increase in respiratory problems, and a 30% increase in convulsions and damage to the central nervous system. There's no way anybody can be able to state that this was a miracle story of the vaccine industry. And Gary, that's pretty much all that this article really presented in terms of what among the unfounded stuff, and it uses the typical kind of language that we see very often. There's numerous studies that show the safety. No, there are not numerous studies. No.
Well, let me give you an example of that, Richard. We interviewed in person one of America's leading toxicologists and immunologists and a Harvard graduate and PhD in the field who's published in the peer-reviewed literature, who said there are thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature about how toxic the ingredients in the vaccines are, and there's no non-toxic ingredients in the vaccines. Hence, all the ingredients are toxic, not just mercury, but aluminum and formaldehyde and aborted fetal cells and polysorbate 80, and they're contaminated. So the science of vaccinology is not a real science. I'll give you one good example. They absolutely lie about statistics, just like they say the flu kills 36,000 people a year. It does not. Richard and I got the CDC's own original data, and it was anywhere from hundreds to the most, I think it was about 1,300 in 1 year, but it was in the hundreds more often than not. They combined the flu with pneumonia. Well, the flu and pneumonia are not the same. And they, by combining those two conditions together, that's where they came up with the 36,000. So they lie all the time. Then if you were to give 1 million people a flu vaccine at the end of a year, let's say 990,000 did not come down with the flu, you would give 100% credit to the flu vaccine. That is insane. There is absolutely no principle of good science that that meets. For example, what if a person was living in Florida where they got more sunlight and hence more vitamin D? What if a person was unemployed living in Minnesota, didn't get the vitamin D, but was also stressed and was overeating and was obese? What about all the people that have cancer? That's an immune compromised condition to your whole body. What about all the people with heart disease? That also is immune compromised. What about the people who have Coxsackie virus, Epstein-Barr virus, hepatitis virus, herpes virus, also have mycoplasma and other upsets of the microorganisms, the biome in their intestine, which most people do? 97% of the American public eat a faulty diet. So those conditions will either contribute to an adverse reaction, or it could contribute, if you were doing something right, to not being susceptible. None of that is taken into consideration with the supercilious nature, the completely unscientific folly in how they collect their data. And worst of all, there are 7 million minimally 7 million American parents who have vaccine-injured children. Many of those are actually physicians. I've interviewed them. I've filmed them, including a professor of pediatrics who vaccinated her own child who became paralyzed and then developed autism on top of that. And she says she lives with the guilt and shame that how many other parents she vaccinated before then who said the child was having adverse effects. And they did not listen. She did not listen. She said in the interview, she said, "I feel so bad because I was telling them it wasn't the vaccine. It wasn't the vaccine until it became my child. And then I saw it was the vaccine." So the one group of women in the United States, as a measurable group, who have chosen not to follow in line with mandatory vaccines and who question vaccines, at least the way they're administered, the amount they're administered, and the timing they're administered, are the scientists at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. Now, those are some very smart people. They're scientists. They're used PhDs. They're used to doing their homework. They take almost nothing for granted. They're critical thinkers. So when they read the data convinced them that they should be cautionary on this. So instead of praising women who empower themselves to make informed choices out of wisdom and research, we condemn those women. We condemn every mother. The media, the New York Times, CNN, Bill Gates, all these pro-scientists, including. So what does it say about a society that is so confused about the truth that they condemn the very thing that they historically have said they support, women's empowerment, women's rights? Oh, unless it comes with reproductive rights, they will support. That's fine. But when it comes to my body, my choice, and vaccines, oh, no, 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 you're a delusional idiot, and the government should take over your body. They should take away your child, forcibly vaccinate, or you should go to some kind of detention or be hurt in some way. And I'm thinking, my God, how separate are we from any dictatorial society, fascistic society? We are there. And the vaccine agenda is just one measure that I could add in others. So thank you very much. And we don't, not for a second, are we presuming that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. couldn't defend himself. He could walk circles with his knowledge now because he's actually suing Merck. And guess what? Guess who else is suing Merck? Two of its own scientists. Yeah. So why don't we hear that? Why aren't those scientists who are suing Merck because of what they're stating is the fraud they saw in vaccine development, why aren't they on CNN? Why aren't they being quoted? That's unfortunate, but that's the reality. Thank you, Richard.
Okay, Gary.
To shift gears a moment, people say, what's a retreat? Well, a retreat's where people collect together and in a beautiful environment, and they try to relax, de-stress, and eat healthier and juice and cleanse and in the process hopefully resolve some of the issues in their lives. I just this morning was talking with some of the people before we went for our nature walk, and one of them said, I have a story to tell you. And I said, well, call in. Let's hear it on the air. So now we're going to hear from two of those people, and I think you'll find their story interesting.
Hello, my name is Alice, and I'm at the Villa Gary Knowles Beautiful Retreat in Texas. This has been some incredible experience. I wish everybody could have the opportunity to do this. When I got here, I could barely walk using a cane. I felt terrible, aches and pains, diabetes. Well, since I'm here, my blood sugar has gone down 70 points, and something else is amazing to me. I didn't know that I had no feeling in my feet. They were numb, so I didn't know that. And now I'm feeling the ground, and so it's helping me with my walking. It's just amazing. One of the things that I especially like is the food. The food is absolutely exquisite and delicious. I've been around for 78 years, which means that I've been to a lot of restaurants and a lot of dinner parties, by the very best. Nothing compares to this. This is absolutely the best food in the world, and I am so looking forward to getting home and with a new shopping list. I think that this experience has probably helped me to prevent what could have been amputation because of my feet. It's just been wonderful, and I recommend it. One of the things that I think is so special about this retreat is that there's a feeling of love every place you go. And there's admiration and respect for each of the people here. And we're all strangers, most of us. But everyone senses the love and the beauty of that. And I wish the whole world could do this.
Good morning. My name is Gail. I would like everyone to know that I am here blessed to be at Gary Knowles Retreat in Texas. I'd like to tell you a little bit about my story. 18 years ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. I had an inoperable tumor as well in my chest wall, and they said I had about 3 to 6 months to live and that I definitely needed chemotherapy or I would be dead sooner. And so at that time, I reached out to a good friend, one of my students, Luann Panisi, and I said to her, I need help, and I'm not willing to do chemotherapy because I don't believe in that poison. So therefore, she brought me into Dr. Gary Knowles' life, and I went on his extensive protocol. It was not easy, but I decided that my life was more important than my breasts. And life was more important to me. I needed to stay alive because there were too many things that I deserved to be here for. So I stuck with that protocol. It was difficult, but my life was important to me. As a result, I am here today, 18 years later. I'm at this wonderful retreat to rekindle my great thoughts about the protocol that I once went through, that I have to resume in my life again, as well as I did for the last 18 years, but to relook at my thoughts and to rekindle the way I see life and be more positive and not allow negative or toxicity into my system or into my thoughts. As a result of my 18 years of being breast cancer free, I look back and realize that a year after I was diagnosed and I was on Dr. Gary Noel's protocol, my oncologist, who I was seeing every 3 to 6 months, was asking me, how did you do this? You know, you're the first diagnostic test, or the first patient to in New York State to be diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer and with no chemotherapy, went into remission. How did you do this? And I said, I went on Dr. Gary Noel's protocol. And they were like, wow. So we're building an alternative wing in the North Shore University Hospital in Great Neck. And I would like to have that protocol, if you would mind sharing it, so that we can implement it there. And I said, of course I would. And here at this retreat, we do a vegan dieting. And I don't mean dieting. It's a vegan diet, meaning we eat vegan food. I've learned that the meat and the way we have the American standard diet is just so wrong for us. But that's what we were bred to do. And I've learned in a different way. But the surroundings here are so beautiful, and the foliage and the green and the animals that run and the birds that sing, and the ability to just step aside in your own self and to be aware of all the beauty of the world. And it has allowed me to walk around this beautiful acreage and to rekindle my spirit and to be all that I can be. One of the experiences that I had here in witnessing was taking a young lady who is a good athlete in very good condition in her 20s. And after 5 minutes of sit-ups, she was fatigued. As a result of she was able to do 18 minutes and 58 seconds of continuous sit-ups, which, much to my amazement, I was taken back going, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. I have seen people walk that couldn't. But anyway, I feel very blessed. The things that I have seen here is absolutely overwhelming, and I think everybody should have that opportunity to witness, not only to see other people, but to see for themselves.
Okay, that's just a couple people and their experiences. I did not know about the oncologist wanting to include it, but then this woman who's been a teacher for 48 years, she said that she has a whole group of medical doctors who are learning dancing and ballroom dancing, and she was mentioning some of their positions very prominent, and they all wanted to know. And so she gave them all protocols, and she said they're all open, and they're curious, and they're interested, and good for that. I'm glad to see anyone, because I have an open-door policy. In my entire career, any doctor, nurse, anyone who's in the profession who would like to come and see a different approach is welcome to do so. In fact, it was Dr. Martin Feldman, who graduated number one at Yale, and then top of this class at Columbia, and College of Physicians and Surgeons, who was a professor over at Mount Sinai, published over 83 papers in peer-reviewed literature. But he wasn't happy. He wasn't seeing the results that he had hoped. So he came over one day. I'd never met him. And he said he really wanted to learn. He had been attending some lectures. So I said, okay, come and sit over there in the chair. I'll just acknowledge to the person I'm speaking with that you're there. And if it's okay with them, you can stay. What I didn't realize, he was like the man who came to dinner. He came and he stayed. Every single night he was there. After putting in a full day's work, he in his own office, he would come over and sit for 4-5 hours. And after about a year, he said, I'm ready to make the change. And he made a complete change. He never used medicine thereafter, but he helped thousands and thousands of patients. And I've had a lot of doctors, hundreds if not thousands of doctors. In fact, the last retreat here, 7 doctors attended, including an oncologist from Sloan Kettering and one of America's leading pain authorities. And they were very open. They didn't understand what they were seeing, just like that woman mentioned. If someone did 5 minutes, well, I got them all in the gym because we were out in the gym. And I wanted to show them the power of positive thought. So the woman who was athletic did 5 minutes nonstop sit-up, and then she couldn't do another one. She was just exhausted. And then I just led her in a simple little guided energy meditation, and then immediately she was able to do 19 minutes vigorously, and it could have gone more, but I had to go run up here and do my show, so I left it. And they see that all the time. And then the message is, whatever our beliefs are of our limitations, they're right. But then if we don't believe we are limited and tap into our internal life force, we're right. You know, Bannister was the one who proved to the world that they were wrong. A human body could run faster than 4 minute mile. When he did it, other people who had never done it, no one had ever done it before he did it and within the next 2 weeks after him. What were they waiting? They were waiting for someone to open that door and show them. So for those of us, many of us, probably 80,000 of us, in the alternative field of healthcare, the physician, the homeopath, the naturopath, the chiropractor, the acupuncturist, the meditators, the yoga teachers, the nutrition counselors, the dietitians, we all are trying to show that there's another way both to prevent and to challenge the disease process. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening, and we look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.